It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jim Dowse.
Oh, hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hello, fellas.
And it's worth saying that it is James Dowse's last podcast.
Is it?
Yeah, they're coming to take you away in a little bit. That's ceremoniously how it all ends. Yeah.
I'm afraid I've had enough of you skipping these weeks and you're just like, I'm not only kicking you off the podcast, you're out of my life.
That's fair enough. I'm leaving, actually, because of your opinions on Last of Us last week.
Well, some things need to be stood by, my friend. But yes, James Dowse is sadly leaving us after today, the Tuesday, is the day that we record this. You can go check out the Choose Your Own Adventure, your last episode
last
of the
ever
show.
Video, What Culture Edited video.
Yes, with Mr. Jules Gill. And we thought we'd do a Q&A for the podcast. People can send in whatever they'd like us to talk about. And we had a lovely little response.
Yeah.
Even from super fans like Michael Hanflick getting involved.
So
it's a lovely little time.
Yeah.
But do you know what we're going to do first, Scott?
Go on, mate.
Me and Josh are going to have a clink of our bottles.
We certainly are. Come on, get this over the microphone.
I was going to say, you do a little...
You know what, James Dowse? Let's do that one more time.
One more time.
There he is.
Beautiful.
I'm going to open it to the mic and it's going to go all over the place.
You did say it was some sort of drinks-based podcast. I forgot that and ate a cupcake instead, but I have a drink in spirit.
A cupcake is still good. You know what? I just thought we it's very rare that this stuff lines up where we can actually get the time and do something for someone leaving. Yeah. How rare is that, you know?
Totally,
it always seems to just kind of like happen and then, oh my God, we haven't had the chance to prepare. But thankfully, your day... Your last day has coincided with the podcast
that
day,
and with many people's jobs, is it really?
Nah, it's weird, isn't it? Yeah. But so here we are, this time to celebrate James Dowse and have a drink with James Dowse.
Yeah. Right on the periphery of it being an actual in memoriam, taking a moment
I'm
to
still here.
Hey, it feels like it, man. How long have we worked together at this point in time? How many laughs have we had together, both on mic and off mic?
4 years and 1 week. I've worked here.
That feels a lot longer than that.
My first ever day here was your birthday 4 years ago.
Is that actually
true? No way.
That can't be right.
It was because we went for drinks. On my first day to celebrate, but it was also your first, your birthday, sorry.
That is, your first day was my birthday.
And my last day is your birthday.
And your last day is my birthday. Yeah. I don't even want you to correct me if that's not right. If
no,
that's
that is just right. That is
me,
absolutely
that's
right.
Unreal. That's unreal. That's like, that. Never mind getting the chance to do content with someone as they're leaving. Yeah. That is like next level. You know what, James? Give me another clink.
So what happens in 4 years' time between me and you? What's next?
Well, what's the next stage of our relationship, I suppose? Where do we go from
We
here?
Should point out...
Just go to the question, Scott.
We should point out that it is Josh Brown's birthday as well, so a lovely happy birthday to one of the best boys to ever do it.
Thank you very much.
Over in the corner.
Happy birthday, I'm quitting.
it's a real good gift, James Dowse.
Setting up a chain reaction, the men are going to take them both away. But if anyone wants to burst out a nice cold drink and just have a laugh with the podcast, feel free if you'd like an excuse to have a bev on the afternoon. So we did a whole Q&A tweet thing. I thought I'd just see what people wanted to talk about. And like I said, we got a lovely response. First question from super fan number one, Amy Rapier, who says, can you ask James Stars why he runs away from me whenever he sees me in public?
Wouldn't you? it's because it is a story for you. The other day I was in Tesco, big Tesco.
Yeah.
And I was going down the escalator And I then got a photo sent to me by Amy Rapier of me holding a bottle of milk going down the escalator. Okay,
because when I was coming back on a train from Manchester, she was sat in front of me.
That's what I mean.
She's just following all of us.
Yeah, that's what she's doing
now. Just reconnaissance.
But yeah, she took this picture but didn't say hello or anything like that. It was just my...
That was watching you.
But then I had to like turn around and she wasn't there and that was it.
That's brilliant. Maybe it was from a different day. Just freaking you out.
I don't know if it's ever been a choose your own adventure or anything, but one of the many things I love that Amy has done is turn your face into a lamp, James Dowse, in the upstairs office. Amy put a picture of your face on the lamp. So when you weren't in the office, you were there, and not only were you there, you were the light of the entire office. Hey, you were the centerpiece. You were the sun. Yeah. You were the life giver, even when you weren't there in the flesh.
But I noticed about 10 minutes ago, you tore that down. So.
Oh, Amy, yeah. What you got now? Like, yeah, we need a new light. The new light will be me by default now.
You printed off a picture of your own face.
Yeah. Hey, it's my birthday. I can do what I want.
When in doubt, hollow out the eyes and put the light behind it. That's the only way to make it work.
I think that's what Leatherface did, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, exactly. It's in the way of tradition. The next question from Stanley Blade, who says, in Josh and James's opinion, what game or project would finally tip Scott into a mental breakdown over the state of the industry? Lack of original IPs, focus on graphics, microtransactions, etc.
Another Last of Us remake.
There we go.
I at this stage, I wouldn't even put it past them. No. I mean, they'll do that for Last of Us Part 2, and I'll hate it as well.
Yeah, I think you've been really close, like, over the past year. The Last of Us remake was obviously
I've been close.
Big, yeah, I think so, man.
Teetering on the edge.
Yeah.
You pull me back in again. Come on.
Standing on the edge of the world, you Forspoken.
Step back in off the balcony.
In the Grand Theft Auto Definitive Editions. I think, James Dowse, that's a great shout. I think the Horizon Forbidden Zero Dawn remaster might do you in. And I just think... After we've been talking, I know I keep scratching my head.
Is that what that is? I think you're trying to get your hat just right, and you're sort of manically moving it back and forward.
It's a nervous tick. I just like sort of brush my hat back and forward.
I thought it must be very satisfying.
To kind of scratch the head underneath. Sorry about that.
Scratch all the heads.
What I was going to say is, both on mic and off mic, you talked to me about what they were saying there. You know, the lack of original IP this year, the amount of sequels, the amount of remakes. I think maybe, you know what? Resident Evil 4 might do it. You know, when you're just kind of thinking, why do we need this? What is this? What am I doing with my life?
I'll be fine until someone says it's better than the original. And then I'll wake up bolt upright in bed at 1 a.m. and go, no, it's not. And I have to record something again.
Hey, I'm not going to lie, mate. After the podcast last week, I thought The Last of Us Episode 1 might have been the one to do it.
Here he is.
I thought it might have been. But
I'm
now,
back on the train now. I like Last of Us Episode 2. Totally great.
Yeah.
Like more original stuff, not just recreating the cutscenes. Yeah. I like originality. Give me actual new stuff.
Just wait for episode 3.
I know, that's what I've heard.
Can we have
Frank and Bill stuff?
Your prediction for what might tip you over the edge.
Oh, God. Getting another open goal wrong. Like Callisto Protocol or some... I don't care. I can't devote the mental capacity to remakes anymore. I just don't care. So the last time I was excited about it was the GTA Definitive Edition. I don't think there's anything from my childhood that would mean that much again. I remember thinking that when the Definitive Edition went sideways, I was like, this actually can't happen again because this meant the most to me. And they've already effed up Sonic Origins when that package came out. It was full of bugs and glitches and everything. So I don't think there's that much more, really. My entire childhood has been mined at this point. So I don't know.
If the Mario movie's not good.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not putting that many eggs in the old Mario basket. I'm looking forward to it a lot, but it's not got like a great pedigree studio wise. It's like the Minions people, so I'm out at the Minions, but I'm not dying for it.
Fair enough.
I guess we'll see. Next question from Kim Camilleri, who says, "What was your feeling after releasing your first video with What Culture, James Dowse?"
My first video. My first ever video was November 2018, because I freelanced for this company for 2 months before I worked here. And it was Ash's video, and it was 10 iconic characters who have never had a good movie.
Right,
and that was my first ever video. I was so proud of it, and all of the comments hated the video because I was like, how dare Ash say all this stuff? And I was there like, I put my heart and soul into it.
But I bet you all like, but the editing's good, isn't it?
Oh, nobody commented on the editing. Everyone was just saying, well, Ash is wrong. And I was like, well, that's just ruined it. But then I realised that's the theme of working here, isn't it?
Yeah,
you can put all your effort in and one comment ruins it.
It is. Never go, my golden rule, because I've almost been 10 years in October I've been doing this. My golden rule is, if you're going to look at YouTube comments, and I guess this goes for anyone, never go more than 5 lines deep. Yeah. Even that is the most extreme thing. Uh-huh. 1 or 2 and scroll slowly. Mm-hmm. And if something doesn't seem like what you want to look at, just move it away. Yeah.
No one can prepare you for that, by the way. Like, no one can prepare you for how personally you will take those comments. And you might get a thick skin to it, which admittedly I think a lot of us do after a certain amount of time. Mm. But those early videos, especially if you're not confident in your own you know, voice acting or anything or presenting or whatever it is. Like, I certainly wasn't. You take those to heart and then you realize quick, I can't spend all of my time looking at these comments or even the nice ones, because then you take those to heart and it's like, no, I've got to live up to that. And it's very for me, it was dangerous, always like, but very nice.
Yeah, for me, it was always like, I wouldn't care if someone was just yelling this down the street at me as I walked through like a city center. So I'm not going to suddenly take it on board in a random comment thing. But at the same time, it's always when it's really random, but it's like personal. It's like something that you can't help, where it's like, he's saying this with that nose or whatever. Yeah. And I'm just I can't do anything about that. Yeah. And, but is my something wrong with my nose? And like, I've just made that up on the spot. Maybe there is. But still, and so whenever something like that happens, I would always be like, oh, I wasn't even thinking of that. And now I can't not think of that.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that bore themselves deep.
What was the first video that you did, James, when you were like on camera? Whether it was
So I actually Googled this as well.
Right.
Googled it.
Of course. Check the Wikipedia.
Of course it's on Google. My first ever video was Jules made me be in a video with you and Ash. And it was him doing some like weird quirky thing where he was just like talking about dogs or something. And then me, you and Ash appear from the bottom and then just shake our heads and then go back down again. And I was so excited to be there for that video.
Aww.
And it got a few hundred thousand views, and I was really happy with it. But to you two, it didn't mean anything because it was just another video. But for me, that was my first ever one.
I love that.
And that was like May 2019. And then the month later, that's when What Culture Music happened.
We got to go on stage.
And then I was just in every video after that.
Yeah, you were.
And because that was like my first ever proper video, that What Culture Music trailer, which was so good.
Which is still online, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it was us two and Scott. And yeah, it was really, really good. It's been going since then, really. But then when I started doing this podcast and the Tuesday videos, that's when I started being in videos
as
much as I am now.
Mm-hmm. Josh, you kind of talked about your first video. Is it just the freaking out about comment stuff?
Yes, I mean, to be honest, I think I've told this story once before and I will continue to tell it until I leave because I think it's very heartwarming.
No, don't please leave. Please do. Please, please leave right now.
We'll see after I've had this Newcastle brown ale. I'll decide then. I didn't even want to do it, man. Like, I didn't want to do it at all. Like, I joined this company just not wanting to be on camera, not wanting to do voiceovers just because I didn't think I would like it. Like, when I did in university and in my own time, like, I did video editing, I did behind the scenes stuff, you know, I made videos, I didn't star in them, I got other people to star in them because I was too shy or nervous or whatever. And it was you, Scott, who was like, you know, do you want to give it a go? And I remember saying no. went, have a think about it, take a weekend, have a think about it, and we'll it doesn't matter if it's not very good, it won't go out. So it was you encouraging me to do that, and it was Rich Hudson was great at helping me do my verse video. I remember he was in the studio, helped me set up, give me some tips and stuff. He was like just the consummate professional, like a solid rock of someone who really knew their stuff, like and knows their stuff presenting wise, who helped me along a lot. And then obviously everyone else, you know, Jules was obviously great as well. But I remember him being in the VO booth of like getting that video done and encouraging some of the bad jokes that ultimately made the final cut of that video. And then when I opened, it was like a really successful one, if I recall. Like, I think it might have got near to 1 million for the first video.
The immortal rule with Josh Brown is that you're always way better than you think.
Maybe. But that was scary, of course, because then you're there, like, sat reading the comments. And
I thought your first one was the one that me, you, and Jules did on Last of Us Theories. Was that after that?
That was, the Last of Us one was the first one.
Right.
And I was going to get to that too, as well. But I would probably class the other one as my first proper video because it was the first one that, like, I conceptualized, the first one I wrote, the first one that was just a voiceover.
Yes.
It was the one where I was responsible for it because the one that, the first one I did on camera was like with you and Jules, and that was great, of course, because I got to talk about The Last of Us. The first
I was
going
to say, if anyone wants to go
about.
Back to that, we did Last of Us 2 predictions.
Yeah.
I have no idea how many of them came true, but that's a funny video from like 2016 or something.
Totally, man. But that was one where I don't think of it because I don't think of myself as a presenter then. That was just like, in my head, it was like you guys just bringing in someone from the office.
Here's this man we found.
Yeah, who liked The Last of Us. Just kind of treated it as a one-off thing. Like, oh, that was a nice thing I did one time.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind if I did that again now and again. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I don't know where that little table went. We had a little tiny little table that we used to do Game of the Year stuff on and everything. Yeah. I don't know where that little table went. After we moved offices, it never came with us.
No, it did
probably
not.
Still there in the middle of one of the rooms.
Ultimately, it turned into a nice experience.
Hell yeah,
and then I just didn't stop. And I'll tell you this, for the first 6 to 10 months, I thought every single time, every single day, that our boss was going to take me off those videos until he found someone, quote unquote, proper that could right. do them. I thought I was like a stopgap for like the entire first year I was doing those videos. I thought once they, you know, get someone in who's a professional at this, I'll be off. And I was so stressed about that happening because I by then I'd grown to love it, but that was my big insecurity at the time.
I'll be completely genuine. The first time I heard you do your recorded voice, I didn't think it was you.
Right.
I thought it was way more professional than it was. Like genuinely, I was like, oh my God, he's way further along than I am. Like if you go to those older recordings, I think it was just nerves manifesting, but I used to be so loud and just speak so fast. Oh my God, is it okay? 10 things, we get through this thing. And it was just this ridiculous performance of attempting to make it sound professional. But yeah, my first video, I've talked about loads before, just super quickly, goes all the way back to like 2014 when we were in, this is like, it would be two previous offices ago, back when the YouTube channel was just getting off the ground. And it was like up to like me and some of the ex staff there to just try and see what we could make work, because it was like, it was just our idea to try YouTube. It made sense to have a YouTube channel. All we had was the articles and the website. And so it was like, okay, try and make that work. So we had a box of foam that you have to speak into because we didn't have a recording studio. So it was like, how do you transform any regular office into a recording environment, get a bunch of sound foam and then sort of coil it round into a box of foam and put a microphone in the middle of it and then hold that up to your face, which is just the stupidest thing. Because it was like, you're holding it up and then looking like downwards out of the box to the script that you had and then trying to like perform it. Thankfully, all those videos have been taken offline. I don't know what's on the channel if you order by the older stuff, but most of those things have been changed. But in terms of the feeling after, I mean, I guess one of the ones that we did back then did go big. Like I said, it's been delayed. Deleted. It was something about like the most replayable games of all time or something. And I just remember just thinking it was cool that it existed. I was just like, I'm getting to actually do this for a living. That's cool. Huh. But the foam box years were, that was a hell of a time.
Yeah. Fair enough.
It was a thing. Next question from George Jackson, who says, what video game dev are you desperate to see a new game from? I'm personally very excited for the next Giant Sparrow game and also the Plucky Squire from Devolver. Also, what puts you off a new movie coming out? Personally, if I ever hear a coming-of-age story, I'm immediately put off.
I love coming-of-age stories. Yeah. I'm so sorry to be that guy. I really do. That'll get me in.
It depends how it's done. Because coming-of-age stuff makes me think of like Lady Bird, like if it's done well.
Yes.
But if you class that as a coming-of-age story?
I would.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
In terms of game dev stuff, I don't really have a specific team, probably Supergiant, because I'm just like, they are on, after Hades, I mean, we know they're doing Hades too, so I'm like, whatever their next IP is. Mm-hmm. I saw the next SteamWorld game got announced a couple of days ago. I don't know if you guys are SteamWorld fans.
No. Is that SteamWorld Dig?
So that's one of them. There's always like, it's like, there's like SteamWorld Quest and SteamWorld Dig, and like, it's basically just the same aesthetic or the same world, and they just, that dev just tries a bunch of genres over time. Mm-hmm. And the next one they're doing is like a city builder. I forget what it's called now, something. But I like the look of it, and I was just like, I just love that mm-hmm. team, because they just seem to go like, oh, what can we try? Let's do something completely different. Also, shout out to SteamWorld Dig 2. Yeah. That was one of the coolest digging platformers.
It's good.
Oh, dude, it's perfect. I love that thing. Yeah. We should also very quickly point out that there's a lot of weird alarm testing stuff happening in the office. So if that's coming through on the recording, I don't think it is, but you never know. Yeah. That's what that is. We're not on fire. We're not being told to leave. Even if we were, we'd stay here anyway. Yeah. So there's that. What about you guys?
I would say Playdead.
Mm.
They make Limbo and Inside? That's them, isn't
it? Oh my God, yes, Playdead. Yeah, Playdead.
I thought so. I want to see their next game.
Ooh, yeah, that's a great show.
I love those two. Yeah. And recently, there was a game by the co-founder of that what was released, but I can't remember what that was called, but apparently it didn't get the best reception.
Okay.
I can't remember what it was called, but either way, I'm excited for their next game, proper game.
Ooh. I actually Google what that was called.
I'm trying to find that. Speaking of the stuff that they put out more officially, Inside was like almost my game of the year in 2016, like save for Titanfall 2. But what an immaculate little, pristine little game, like not an inch of pixel out of place kind of thing. Uh-huh. Anticipated stuff, Josh Brown.
Well, you guys have gone for anticipated for the right reasons, stuff that you're excited to play, creative new ideas that might come out. Mm-hmm. I want to know what BioWare's up to, because obviously they have Mass Effect 4 and they have the next Dragon Age.
Yes.
But I need to know how those games are going to play. I was just announced the other day that Mac Walters, who is a veteran of BioWare with the company for 19 years, has left. And now I'm just starting to think, like, we know it's not going to be live service after Anthem. We know that they have apparently committed and recommitted to the single player experience. But I'm dying to know, similarly to Bethesda, whether or not BioWare still has it in them to create a BioWare game. Something as iconic as Mass Effect, something as iconic as Dragon Age. Funnily enough, the next two games that they're making. But can they are they still a developer who can be on top, or will this be, mm-hmm. and I hope it's not, mm-hmm. you know, their final swan song, their last yeah. effort, their last gasp, I don't know.
I will say, that game I think you were trying to think of was Somerville.
Yes,
that's one, one of the co-founders of Playdead. BioWare for me, and I know this is a really tired comparison, but it feels like the Ship of Theseus thing from like WandaVision, where it's like if there's so many parts that have been replaced over enough time, is it even still BioWare anymore? And I don't think it is. Like you've got the, I can't even think of the names of the two doctors that founded it, but the founders have left. If Mark Walters has left, he's one of the only veterans that was there. It's kind of like the whole, well, I was going to say it's kind of like 343, but I was just trying to think more of the way Halo used to have an authored voice to it. It's just not really there anymore. It'll be a miracle if BioWare feels like BioWare ever again, because the whole landscape of the industry has changed and everything.
Yeah.
Of genre would you like them to delve into as a developer?
It sounds regressive, right? But I would like them to just go back to what they've been doing, but do it well. Like, you know, make a platformer. 3D platformer. Make another live service.
Oh my God, if they did a Mass Effect like a 3D platformer, like Crash style.
Yeah. That would be the game that tips me over the edge. That would be the one that makes me go,
come back, Josh.
Yeah, no. Nah, man, I just want like those two franchises to be back on top. I feel like after The Witcher 3 came out and everyone was assuming that RPGs were going to come back in style, like that kind of rich, complex experience, we got a lot of stuff that aped The Witcher 3. We got a lot of Assassin's Creed games that superficially, you know, were built around the ideas of The Witcher 3, but we haven't really got anything as deep. We haven't really got anything as complex. And BioWare used to fill that gap. Bethesda used to fill that gap to a certain extent. And I just want something as interesting, something as unique as a Dragon Age Origins or a Mass Effect 1, even if it's a continuation of those franchises, go back to the kind of storytelling and memorable characters and scenarios that made those games special. They don't even have to reinvent the wheel for me. They just need to rediscover what made them great to begin with.
Oh man, playing through the Legendary Edition, I was like, I have missed these games. Like, I've missed something where it's a whole new world and it just plays well and it feels authored and fleshed out. It's just that whole thing of like, you compare it to something like Forspoken, it's like, I feel like I should play that just because it's the new thing, but I know what every single part of that is going to feel like, and it's just, it's off-putting as opposed to something that was so screaming originality as Mass Effect, or at least in terms of in the game space. Next question from Nelson Fowler, who says, have you listened to the official companion podcast for The Last of Us HBO show? I think it provides some great insight as to why things were or were not changed. I also think we should talk about episode 2 quickly.
I've not listened to the podcast, but I know that I will, because I enjoyed the Chernobyl one.
There was a Chernobyl one.
Which was also extremely good, and obviously it's the same person who did that and whatever. So no, I will be watching it, and also, what do you think, Josh?
I really like the podcast. I was listening to it in the gym the other night, the first episode, and it was really good, like great for if you're on a commute, if you've got some time to fill, because they're really short.
I've been telling you this about podcasts for years.
No. You've been telling me to listen to like an hour and a half podcasts. This is like 35 minutes, 40 minutes, the perfect length for me in my attention span. And it is probably similar to the Chernobyl one, Douse, like full of really interesting nuggets. Like the first episode, there was a really great discussion that they had about a note they got from HBO when they decided to split the first two episodes and actually, instead of release them as two separate episodes, merge them into one, because they got a note saying that that would be better for the audience, you'd get to know Ellie, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, considering how short they are, they have a lot of, you know, really interesting insight. And it's just really nice to hear Neil Druckmann in particular, you know, be able to speak about his work, because the guy gives great interviews, but he's notoriously a shy person, as far as I can tell. That's what Craig Mazin says in the podcast. So to have those two talking about the episodes, to have Troy Baker host it, I think is a great addition.
I'm really proud of Troy Baker getting, like, just the fact that he's hosting the HBO podcast. I was just like, that's cool. That's just cool. Like, you look at him, you think of his trajectory, you think about the roles that he took in 2013 when he blew up, when he was like in Final Fantasy 13 and Bioshock Infinite and The Last of Us, and then to like 10 years later he's hosting the adaptation of the show and he's hosting the podcast every week. I just think that's really cool. We actually completely skipped past answering the other half of George Jackson's question before, which was, what if we hear something attached to a movie, what is it, what puts us off?
When
he was talking about coming of age stuff, I'll just go with anything in the MCU. I don't care. I think for me, it's like, if it's something that looks like it will make a cool, like, hour and a half, 2 hour movie, and then actually it's stretched out into a 10 episode TV show, I'm immediately done. Like, that whole new Secret Wars thing they're doing looked really cool in the trailer, and then it was like a new series coming soon. I was like, I'm immediately done. I'm not going to watch that.
For me, I think it would be specifically, if Netflix advertises a $200 million blockbuster that they've made. That is, to me, and I've only seen bits and pieces of these movies, like the blandest thing you could ever produce. Like they look bad. They're just like boring, and they're just like, they're competent in a bad way. Like they don't seem even feel like they've cost that amount of money. Mm. It just feels like capital C content to me. So
very true.
I have
something to throw on.
100%, man. I have just sort of, I've come to terms with the fact that I'm not going to be in the discourse for any of those movies anymore because I can't. I can't do it. it's annoying because they get really good actors, like you know, your Ryan Goslings, your Chris Evans, your Chris Hemsworths, all of these people, and yet the movies that they're in are just, for me, very bland.
No, they totally are. Yeah,
I can't even think. I hate it when a film, as you say, there with streaming service goes straight to a streaming service instead of going to the cinema. Because once it skipped the cinema, I don't know if they've got as much trust in it.
Yeah, it's almost like it loses like a certain air of like what you want from a movie.
But recently I saw a film called The Menu, which I saw it was going straight to Disney Plus, but then I saw it was in the cinema as well. So I went, I'll take a chance on it because it's at the cinema. They obviously have faith in it. It was one of the best films I've seen in a long time.
Ooh,
I wouldn't say it's one of the best, but it is a great film.
It's really solid.
I'm glad that I saw it in a cinema compared to at home where it wouldn't have been the same.
Disney Plus is crazy for us here. I
cannot track whatsoever what's going on.
No.
Hey, Barbarian's on there. Is it? Why?
That's it. I said that Barbarian was on Disney Plus. This is why you shouldn't look at the comments, by the way. In a video, I was like, oh, you can watch it now on Disney Plus. And everyone in the comments was saying, what's this idiot saying? It is not on Disney Plus.
Oh.
But we get some crazy stuff over here. We've got like The Walking Dead. We've got The Menu. We've got Barbarian. We've got Banshees of Inisherin. All of it comes to Disney Plus. And for me, it makes it a good service. But that's a weird service, you know?
I feel like, yes, there's some sort of weird, because we have weird crossover stuff in the UK where like HBO Max is on Sky Atlantic. Like Last of Us for us is on Sky. And then other, for whatever different deals Disney are doing or Fox are doing, that's just, I think that's three or four other channels over in America, and everything just folds into over here.
Because I've got Hulu as well, which is the mature content, but we get that as Disney Plus Stars, I think it is called.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's like this big amalgamated thing. But what was the movie that Frances McDormand was in a couple of years ago about like being a nomad?
Nomadland.
And it was just like realizing that was on there, and I was just like, what? Like, how? Why? Like, next to Star Wars or whatever.
Because I watched that on Disney Plus, but I'd have preferred to seeing that in the cinema.
Yeah, same. Yeah. I think this is the year that like the cinema's back. I mean, it's like last year you had obviously Top Gun, Avatar's making like $2 billion or whatever. But I just feel like that general conversation around, can we live without cinema? I feel like that finally has an answer now where it's like, no, some things are just better in the cinema. Yeah. And that general sort of flirtation with, what if you could have everything at home, hasn't bore through.
Yeah.
Like it just isn't as fun at home kind of thing. Even though I like watching stuff at home. There's some stuff that just is better in a cinema.
Do you know what I'm seeing next at the cinema? Puss in Boots.
That's where I'll be as well, my friend. I've heard very good things.
I've also heard good things.
I've heard it compared to Spider-Verse.
That's what I've heard,
And I'm like, that's my favorite thing ever.
Yeah.
And I'm married, but I still want to see... Spider-Verse is really good, so I'm just like, if it can be anywhere close to how good Spider-Verse felt, then...
I want another Shrek.
Another Shrek.
In like the fancy art style of Puss in Boots?
I just want Shrek back.
What were they on? Shrek 5? Shrek 6? What number are they on?
I've done 5. Forever After was the last one.
Right, I think I dropped off. I saw the first two.
Right.
I don't know.
Whoa. No, the first two are the best one. Third's not the best.
Three's got Prince Charming. I think I was done after that.
Yeah. Justin Timberlake has Prince Charming.
Right.
No, Shrek 2 is one of the best sequels of all time.
It's your final day, so I'm going to give you that.
You say whatever you need to say.
Yeah, agree with that. You're even clinging your drink to Shrek 2.
Oof. Beautiful.
It's a risky maneuver because you don't want to actually clink too much in case something breaks. It's
worth it for Shrek, though.
It's careful. Yeah, sometimes some things are just worth it. For The Last of Us, we did talk a little bit about that. Episode 2, we'll not spend too much longer on it because I'll get to the next question. But some of the HBO podcast, it is very much recommended, hosted by Troy Baker. Quick thoughts on episode 2 overall. Where do you guys come down on the kiss? The kiss is doing the rounds as something that's dividing the fandom.
Yeah, I didn't care. I was happy it happened, I guess. Mm-hmm. I didn't complain. It made my skin crawl when the things came out of that person's mouth.
Yes.
And obviously that's not in the game, so it was a unique addition, which I didn't mind.
Yeah, I was just sort of like, that's a bit weird. But then I'm not sold on the tendrils. I'm not even sold. I don't like the tendrils. I prefer the spores. And having little clusters of just like cotton.
Creepy, though.
That bit when this at the start of the episode when it like moves by itself during the autopsy is kind of fun. But just the spores, I don't know, aerial dispersal, I find is way freakier than it's a tendril and it's got a hive mind and whatever.
Oh man, like the first, not to talk about The Last of Us, for this whole podcast again. But the first episode, no, the first scene of this episode where you have the dead infected woman on the table and then the doctor like leans down. And even though the person is dead, it coming out afterwards, to like it's still alive inside the body, at least for now, and trying to find a new host. After being unsure about the depiction of the tendrils in episode one, after that scene, I was just thinking, that is so skin-crawlingly scary. Yeah. I'm kind of with it. The kiss, I'm more divided on, like, I think, like you were saying, Dowse, it works as an effective, unsettling moment for sure.
Yeah.
I just don't know personally if I appreciate maybe some of the subtext of the way it is shot or what it does maybe to Tessa's character compounded with other changes. But I talk more about that in Ups and Downs.
Everyone should check out. The Mason's explanation as well about like the way the infected work, I thought made them a bit worse. Not, hey, it sounds like me from last week. But like when he was like, oh, you know, the way that that dude sort of walked up to her really slowly, it's like the infected won't necessarily bother you. If you're up for being assimilated, they'll just kind of kindly let you in. And I was just like, oh, I'd prefer them when they're ruthless and refusing to stop and they want to spread the infection and whatever. So like that's kind of, I guess people can go out and read all the different comments from Craig Mazin because they're on it right now. Like they have the podcast immediately after the episode and the hashtag discourse is very strong. It's like trending all day, every day right now.
The only thing that didn't stick with me was the lighter trope. Where it was just like, it wasn't turning on.
Yeah. Her whole, like, death is so changed. It's so different.
I didn't mind it. It still worked and was effective.
I kind of just watched that, because when she starts tipping over the gas cans, and then she's like, all the grenades are out. And I was like, this is more video gamey than her actual video game death.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of, like, the like a commando style, everything's going to blow up. And, like, come on, all you people. Like, there's, like, this one big last stand thing. And, and then when you get the external shot of the place blowing up and everything, I was just like, yeah, okay. I don't really feel anything. Mm-hmm. I felt a lot more in the original.
Right.
Because I thought it was quite stark in the game where, like, you come out on the top floor and you just see her dead. Yeah. Like, they've already killed her and moved on. And it's like, oh, that's all she was. Like, that's that to them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm not going to be negative about The Last of Us, though. I'm going to be positive about the show. Next question from Coach Marv, who says, in a world where digital is king and there's little to no mystery anymore due to excessive marketing, when was the last time you purchased a game based off the box art or because the main character looked cool without knowing anything else about the game itself?
I've got two.
Have you?
From last year. One of my favorite games of all time, so I won't talk about it. Immortality was one that I just jumped into because I was scrolling Game Pass and I looked, not at the box art, which is admittedly quite bad for that game, but just the screenshots of the game sold me on it, so I jumped in. One that was purely box art was that Themessia that I played as well, the Souls, like...
Oh, yeah.
The Souls, yeah, like the Souls clone that just does play like a mixture of Bloodborne and Sekiro. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing that just on the What's New on PlayStation page, and it was a bit cheap. Mm-hmm. It was described as a Souls-like. It had a cool front cover. I liked the aesthetic and thought, yeah, let's give it a go, and it was good.
Right. Any for you, James Doss?
The other day, I was going through PS Plus, and I saw Tearaway Unfolded.
That's a beautiful game.
It is, but I didn't care too much for it. I got quite bored after like half an hour, because I knew what it was, but I liked the art style it was going for.
Yeah.
And I liked like, the involvement with the controller and the touchpad and all that stuff. But as I say, I did get bored, but that's what drew me in.
That's cool.
Cutesy art style.
I don't think I have one for just going off the box art or anything. I'm too caught up in, is this worth my time? I always end up Googling something. I look at some reviews.
You don't read descriptions.
I do not read descriptions. No. Unless, I don't need, I was going to say unless it, I have no, why would I read a description? I can just look at some screenshots. I guess I'll do screenshots if I manage to get in through the thumbnail of whatever the thing is. But that's if I don't even know what it is anyway. 9 times out of 10, I feel like I'm constantly researching what's coming up or reading about it or whatever. That just is the entirety of my life. Yeah. So it's very rare that I can just go, that looks cool, and then go from there.
Could I submit a follow-up question to Coach Marv's question? Because it is James Dowse's last day, and I need to insert myself into this discourse as well. Jumping off that, what's the best recommendation you've ever got from someone where you just think, I trust you forever now, you've got that bang on? I would never have played that without you, but I'm so grateful for you bringing that into my life.
I'm actually going to be really nice here to you both. It was Returnal. And it was because, A, you gave me a free code, Scott.
I did.
And B, you reviewed it, and I edited the review, so I listened to your advice.
And,
I mean, it was free, so I wasn't going to lose, but your advice made me want to play it, and I loved it.
I didn't even set that up. I did not know that was coming. And you know what?
You were fishing for compliments.
I wasn't even doing it, but I guess that must have been subconsciously James Dowse.
So you is my answer to that question.
That's a very wholesome way to go. I don't have much in regards, like I can't think of many where someone's gone, you should play this, because I am that guy that recommends way more than I'm recommended to. However, recently, Josh, we were talking about Dead Space 3 like a couple of weeks ago in relation to Callisto Protocol, and you were just saying it's a better game than Callisto. It's worth checking out, and I really like Dead Space 3. I've mentioned it loads this week, and so I'm not going to say that's my best recommendation of all time, but that game is very, very fun, chunky, and gory, and it's way better than its reputation would attest.
Hell yeah, man.
I would say.
I think mine, again, not my favorite game of all time, but a great recommendation and a game that I wouldn't play otherwise. You recommended Tunic last year.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that would have been something where I looked at the box art, funnily enough, and gone, not for me. Not for me in a million years. That and Hades, I think, were two that you recommended, and I probably wouldn't have played them otherwise, whether it's because of the art style, whether it's because it's a roguelike, but I'm really pleased I did because they were great.
You're recommending Signalis. That was oh my God. Going through Signalis for the first time, I was just like, this is just perfect. This is perfect game design. There's so much game here, and the aesthetics are solid and memorable, but it's such a love letter to PS1 horror. Like, that was perfect. Yeah, I'll say Signalis, actually, because that was just something where I was like, this is every single inch of this is exactly my S, and I absolutely love it. Anyway, next question from Jojo Hodge, who says, can we get a full-on breakdown of the steps in both Scott's and Josh's hair care routine and then compare notes with each other and make it musical by having James edit in some slapping tunes and auto-tuning you guys talking about your hair products? Now, that's quite a big order.
That's an ask.
That's a big old ask. We could talk about hair stuff. Used to be synonymous with hairspray, Mr. Josh.
I used to be, and I tried really hard to be unsynonymous with hairspray after a little while. Not that I didn't appreciate the comments, but I thought this can't be my brand forever. I've got to change, so use the lockdown.
What was that fake game art, and you powered up by using hairspray cans?
That was
your HP bar.
That was good. It was a good gimmick for a good while, I must admit. I really enjoyed it. Honestly, if it's at work, I don't want to do anything with the hair. I've got a hat on, and that's why I'm wearing a hat in so many videos, because I don't have the time in the morning. If it's a weekend, wash the hair. Uh-huh. Let the hair dry naturally, not with the blow dryer. I'm not a fan of the blow dryer.
Same.
And then give it a brush. Whack on some got-to-be volumizing powder, which is an absolute game changer.
Yeah.
Get some of that in, get a bit of volume, a slight dab of hairspray if it was a little bit too fresh when you did the volumizing powder and it feels a little bit all over the place. Maybe a dab of hairspray, a little bit of styling. That's all I go for these days.
It's a beautiful time. Mine's just stick a bit of gel in. Like, I don't forget which company is, some sort of Shockwave. It's something really strong, with strong strength of gel, because my hair just folds over, flops down, whatever. And I like a bit of the old spikes. Only recently have I started doing slightly more sideways spikes.
Yeah.
But there's very little to my life other than just scooping a bit of gel and then running it, doing the shaky hand thing through the hair and then doing some sort of weird hand motion. And then if it stays, it stays. And I just sort of walk away from the mirror like, okay, cool. It'll just stay like this.
The people listening to this might not know this at this moment in time, but Scott Tilford actually has a lovely new trim right now. You've got a nice little fade in, and you've grown out the beard.
That was Josh's idea. You recommended this.
I don't think that's true. I encourage you to do it, but it wasn't my recommendation.
Well,
it was all
your
you.
Recommendation. The fade.
I wanted to live vicariously through Scott because I couldn't get that.
Yeah, the other day I was just like, you know beards. I was like, can we just talk beards for a bit? And then Josh was very encouraging and said like, yeah, because I was trying to think of something to do beard wise. it genuinely was your advice that I filtered through to the man who shaped my beard, and now it looks quite nice. So that was good. But yeah, in terms of an overall hair care routine. There's very little. I just wash the old hair and then gel it. James Towers?
What do? I wash it and then I put some powder in it, which sticks my fringe up, and then I hairspray it to keep that fringe there.
That's the dream combo, isn't it? Yeah. The powder, the hairspray, I think.
Very easy. I used to do wax, but then I realized that when I'd wash the wax out, my hair would come out with it.
That's not good.
And it just hurt all the time.
The Last of Us.
It is.
Yeah.
So instead I go for powder now, and it just stays where it needs to stay.
Because I feel like that this sort of like, I mean, not to make this a hair care podcast, but the idea of just being able to go, does this work? Does this not work? What am I actually supposed to be doing? When do I use a blow dryer to get some effective spikes? When do I just gel it with my hands? Blokes don't get any of this. We never get told any of this
advice,
though. Nor do we really go searching for it, which is why the conversation with you the other week was very productive. And I've got a lovely little trim. Hey, so sometimes it works out.
Sometimes it works out. It's hard because I think with hair especially, I'm guilty of this even now. Like, it's hard to try something.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in a video, everyone can see that you're trying something and it might not be working.
Oh my God. It was like 2 weeks ago when I'd slightly grown this beard over Christmas, and then I held my shaver, I held it the wrong way. And it was just this stupid thing where I'd sort of buzzed it through the middle of my beard to try and trim it, and then realized that I'd knocked it down to 1 mil. And I was just all in the middle. It was like the Moses part in the waves. I was like, there's nothing here now in the middle. And so I was like, well, the only way out is to make everything else 1 mil and make it all really small. And then I was like, I can't be on camera for like 2 weeks while I grow this all back. So that's why there was no news videos. Like, oh, because it's not really, but that was, it definitely helped that I didn't need to go on camera. So there was that. Next question from superfan number two, Michael Hamflett, who says, perfect slash favorite console shape ever. PlayStation 2 Mini for them. It's an A5 piece of paper and also a console. How the F did they do that? Also says that he's from Jane McDonald fan. No, I don't know what that means.
Yes, so you do.
Jane McDonald fan.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Do you not know who that is?
What's that?
Oh, that's a joke.
I don't know what that is.
I'll quickly brush past. Jay McDonald's a cruise ship entertainer who Michael Hamflett really likes.
Right, okay.
And I also really, I really like. So that's a really niche joke.
That's a very good sign up. In terms of favorite console shape ever, I remember when I was younger loving all the descriptions of the 360 before it came out, and that it was meant to evoke an inhalation. It was meant to be something breathing, and that's why it curved inwards, and it was meant to represent like innate power that was ready to be released. Young me thought that was brilliant.
That's cool.
It's right. I don't know if it is, but I thought it was back then.
You know what, right? It's not my favorite, but just to go off the Xbox 360 comment, right?
Yes.
I used to think that owned back in the day when that came out, like you were saying, you know, it felt next gen, it felt new, it felt awesome. I think that might be the one that's the most dated now, though. I look back at the 360.
The design wise.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think, what were we thinking? What was going through our minds with that design?
The PS3.
Oh, the PS3 sucks as well, but more than the PS3, I think. I don't know. Okay. There's something about the 360 that hasn't stood the test of time for me personally.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like the if you stand it up, all the replaceable faceplates and everything. I was a massive fan of that stuff. He's shaking his head.
Compared to Xbox, the original one.
Yeah.
No, Xbox One. That was awful.
Oh God, yeah.
Oh, That was
no. You can't defend the Xbox One.
The original Xbox One, 2013, the VCR box.
That is inoffensive.
It was just
it's nothing. It looks like disgusting. Some
yeah.
weird relic from like a weird brutalist regime.
I can take that, I think.
Bit I think
of,
you can.
Bit of brutalism in
take
the old,
take mine as well.
Architecture.
I don't want it.
No, I'm going to say something outrageous now because I like the PS5. I know everyone hates the PS5, but
I think it's... I like big, dumb consoles.
Me too.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
The more it looks like a weird, like, binder, the better.
I think, like the 360, I will love the PS5 right now, and then in 10 years look back and think it's one of the worst things ever made. But right now... I think
the PS5 will age badly visually, aesthetically. I'd be surprised if they didn't overhaul the visuals in the PS5 Pro or whatever the next thing's going to be. And I do think the Series X is the best looking system right now. It's just such an effective tower with the big giant fan on the top, and then depending on what angle you look at it, you can see different amounts of green. And with the Xbox green, I think that's a really cool.
If you were to invite somebody into your house and they saw an Xbox Series X versus a PS5, what would they pick out?
I think most people would say that in terms of like which one looks, because I think the Series X is made to fit into like an entertainment home system.
Yeah, that's it. Center. It blends in.
Yeah, totally,
the PS5
yeah.
is a showpiece, isn't it?
Yeah, which I guess is what they wanted. Like the PS5 is based on, I forget the name of the building, but some building in Dubai that is quite similar shaped or whatever. And I guess, they wanted to stick out. But I like big, dumb, peripheral stuff. So like, even though it looks stupid, I'm a huge fan of it.
My personal favorite console design is the PS Vita.
Oh, I'm going to miss him so much.
I think that is the best looking console ever.
Beautiful system as well.
It looks nice.
I love the PS Vita.
Yeah.
So much.
You know what? It's a great device, but if we're talking handhelds, the Switch handheld gets it for me. Yeah. There's something about the ergonomics of that, the lovely primary colors on left and right, and the size of it. I don't think there'll ever be a more perfectly sized handheld for me personally than the Switch. Like, the Steam Deck looks fine. Bit too big.
It's way too big.
Yeah. The Switch is just, it has it. It's got you can tell its silhouette in like, when you see it in a room, you think, it's like, I would say it's iconic. It is iconic, I reckon. Mm-hmm.
And is that because of the primary colors, Joy-Cons?
It certainly helps, you know.
I was going to say, I always forget that the standard model of the Switch is the gray one. Like, we have blue and red ones.
Is that right?
Yeah. But like, I don't think they were limited edition, but there was something about they're not as mass produced as the gray ones. As far as I know, maybe that's changed. But there was a whole thing about the standard Switch model is the gray one. The more sort of
I've only ever seen the red. I know the grey one exists, but I've only seen the primary
grey
ones.
I hope I'm wrong because I always loved the idea of the red and the blue being Mario and Zelda because they launched in the same year and said they're the two pillars. They hold up everything else in terms of how they support the screen. Like, I always loved that as an idea. Throwing in here a question from Shockwave, who says, "Have we seen the article about the PlayStation 5 Pro coming in April?" Lol. How much salt are we taking with that? And if it does happen to arrive, how would you feel about it?
Well, not to throw in some news, but I saw something from Tom Henderson this morning, actually, that kind of contradicted this. Yeah, Tom Henderson said, apparently, that this April upgrade is actually just a different version of the PlayStation 5, and it's not a Pro. Right. Apparently, according to Tom Henderson, he doesn't think that we're going to get, from Sony at least, a Pro version this generation because it's taken so long to get the regular version out to customers.
Right.
We'll get a different SKU of it. We'll get probably a different shape that saves Sony money, but it won't be billed as the PlayStation 5 Pro. It'll just be the PlayStation 5 because it does feel like, and I think he said this in the report, like there's so much untapped potential with the PlayStation 5 right now. It doesn't feel like the generation has started. I feel like we've got so much to go, so much potential there that it wouldn't make sense.
If they tried to say that they're doing a more powerful PS5 at this stage, that would be so genuinely insulting to people who have just got it and those of us who have been waiting for something to look like it can only run on a PS5. We still haven't got any of them yet. So I know there are some PS5 exclusives, but there's not been that much that's actually blown people away.
Whereas last generation, they were already underpowered by the time they come out.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So. I feel like there's a lot more to be done.
Switch should have done it. I know we kept making a video every other week, but there should have been a Switch.
I always go back to the Jason Schreier thing. He's never wrong. The one time he was wrong about this. The Switch Pro still feels like the most obvious thing in gaming to do. But the most recent version of those rumors is that it's not until at least next year or something.
Yeah.
So whatever. We don't need it. We don't need another PS5 Pro at this stage. Next question from Rain, who says, which fruit is the best when mixed into a long cocktail? A long cocktail.
The long cocktail, by the way.
The longest cocktail.
The best version of a cocktail. I don't want a short. I want the long, tall glass, please.
Oh, yeah. I'll back that. I've not done much cocktail mixing myself, so I don't really know.
Any fruit? I like the oranges. I like the strawberries.
Strawberries?
I like the strawberries.
I tell you what.
A strawberry daiquiri.
Oh, I mean, I love that. That's a shout. Strawberry daiquiri, great. I'm not a strawberry flavour generally. You know when you get like sweets that are like Starbursts or anything like that, and
Bubble
you get the reds, you get the purples, you get the greens, you get the oranges. You can discard the reds for me.
Oh my God, my friend.
The greens are the ones you discard.
I used to think that I was in the majority in this because I love the greens and I thought everyone loved the greens. And then I grew up and went to university and the only thing I learned in university was that nobody likes the greens.
The only one that you want to get rid of is the purples, mate.
Purples. Nice. Second best.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
They're very strong.
Scott, you're wearing a purple jumper right now.
I love the color purple. But not the taste of purple.
I'd probably go pineapple for the actual juice. I like a pineapple juice. I like that in a cocktail. I don't know what cocktail actually has pineapple in it, but I like the idea of it being in everything.
Which
one's a pina colada?
Oh, I don't like that. It's like coconut and stuff.
Coconut's beautiful. Yeah. Another question was about which fruit is best mixed into a cocktail, but I can only think of the Oreo cocktails that I like to get sometimes from the city centre. And they're called a Cookie Monster. Sideways Oreo.
Is that not a smoothie?
I don't know.
Or a milkshake?
No, it's alcoholic. It's a thing called a Cookie Monster cocktail. Someone out there will know what it is. That's what I'm going with. My favorite fruit is Oreo. Next question from Shane, who says, are large-scale devs destined to disappoint? Square Enix, EA, and Ubisoft seem to do nothing but disappoint fans. However, the smaller scale, not necessarily small devs, are pumping out higher quality products, like Santa Monica and Insomniac, for example. Or are publishers the actual issue? I wouldn't say Santa Monica and Insomniac. I guess I know what he means compared to Squeenix and EA and stuff. Yeah.
I know what he means by that, but like EA brought out like It Takes Two last year, which was one of
they published it anyway. Yeah, yeah, they didn't make it.
But even still, like that's one of my favorite games. Like there is still potential in these studios. They're not the worst.
No, I think something like the Insomniac model is like arguably the way to go for AAA stuff. Because Insomniac have turned around so much in the last like 5-6 years. Like they actually have an unbelievable track record right now. But there's always that thing of like how much are they reusing engines or whatever.
So is he meaning this is a developer or publisher?
We've kind of blended the two because talking about large scale developers, I guess Ubisoft, for example, have like, it's like 16 dev teams, but they're all within Ubisoft, but they're all called Ubisoft Montreal, Ubisoft Singapore, whatever.
Like a lot of them do, only like the people who work for the actual Ubisoft dev teams, not like just as a publisher, like sometimes they work together on projects. It's like thousands and thousands of people at times.
Yeah.
At times, you know, it's like insanely big, like a huge amount of staff all working on Assassin's Creed or whatever to get it over the line. And even in Capcom, I think you have like, you know, Capcom Team 1, Capcom Team 2 or whatever who works on like Resident Evil or Devil May Cry or whatever like that. I think the Ubisoft model is, I don't know if that's like just, like I don't know how you can have that many people working on something and have it feel cohesive.
The problem is scale for me. Like it's large scale regardless of if it's developers, i.e. more chefs in the kitchen, or if it's publishers, and there's just not enough communication happening between like the literal coding, what actually is this game, how is it coming together, and how do we market it and whatever. For me the issue is scale, because if you have a really good connection between publisher and developer and the game being made is focused like Spider-Man or Insomniac, and that's directly in touch with PlayStation on the publisher side, then it all comes together a hell of a lot cleaner. There's a direct comparison to Halo and Microsoft and how messy that was, whether it's on the coding side or the way it was marketed and the fact it was delayed so last minute and everything. So for me, it's just a scale issue. There's only so many people you can throw at something before there's no way you could possibly coalesce.
Yeah.
Next question from the 24th Gunner of 2023. Are there any platformer levels that you've ever wanted to run through obstacle course style? Ever since I was a little kid, I've wanted to have a go at some of Crash Bandicoot's levels, preferably one without the lava.
James Dowse, I'm sensing Doritos a bottle clink course.
Coming in. Clink it. He said it.
Hey, that's what you were
going to
say.
You ruined it. Let's clink
all
the
same. We're going to say the same word at the same time as clinking.
Doritos.
Crash
course.
Never saw that coming out one more.
Guys, it's a mess.
Doritos crash course.
There you go.
What an absolute game that was.
Absolute legendary, top tier, S tier, God tier game.
You've got Total Wipeout elements in it. You've got Takeshi's Castle elements in it. It's just top tier. That's it.
And
that's,
you know what, James Dowse? I reckon you and I have played through that obstacle course enough times where I don't even think I need a practice run. I could just muscle memory it. And if my legs worked well enough to get me over some of those jumps, I think it would be the best day of my life.
Because the whole idea was to take a regular level and make it an obstacle course level. I'm just saying, if we're being serious.
But if a regular level is an obstacle course level, does that not count?
It's true. In terms of Crash Bandicoot's levels, the idea of doing something like the high road properly would be very hard.
It's scary.
Yeah, I'd probably die.
Very scary. God,
you're hard.
Yeah, I don't actually do it. I'm just thinking in terms of Crash. When I think of a sort of general level of Crash Bandicoot, I think of the high road.
Yeah.
I don't want to be anywhere near that thing.
No, I don't want it, man. Nah, we so, nah. Anything from Crash Bandicoot 1 would be terrifying.
Give me Spyro's levels. Give me the lovely little first level in the field. Give me that.
Yeah. I like the ones in New Super Mario Brothers where you go on like a roller coaster.
Yeah. Oh my god, you remember the roller coaster in Ape Escape?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, you love that.
You must have like 10 from the entire Super Mario franchise, surely.
Level 1 on Super Mario. Level 1-2.
Actually, I don't even know. Because in theory, when I go to Japan, hopefully at the end of March, I'm going to Super Nintendo World. And I know that they... I don't know if they've recreated the levels. I know they've got Peach's Castle. I don't know if they have like bits of level you can.
It's just
through.
Like an open zone, isn't it? The area.
Okay.
Which looks like Super Mario 3D World.
Yeah,
and the rest of it is just like little tunnels.
You can get a little wrist thing, and you can punch blocks and stuff.
You can do
I want to punch all the blocks. next question from Mr. Woodtopia, who says, "What do you think is going to be the next groundbreaking gaming mechanic that is going to change every video game thereafter? For example, climbing high up to unlock part of the map."
Gah.
Something on that level is very hard to predict.
It is, isn't it?
Question.
We're not
game developers.
We're not. I think Elden Ring's that the map is bigger than you think mechanic.
Oh,
is that all Breath of the Wild did though?
No, because in Breath of the Wild, it was like you still had the boundaries were set.
Okay,
and you're filling it out. Yeah. Breath of the Wild was more like Ubisoft, whereas Elden Ring pretends the boundaries are there, and then you zoom out and zoom out and zoom out. I think that'll be in everything.
Yeah,
that would be. I hope so. I hope if there's something. Developers steal from that game, it's that, because the sense of wonder that it inspired, it means you can have a smaller map, but as long as you make people think it's smaller than it is, it feels huge, it feels expansive, it feels never ending.
I can't think of that many, because most recent video game mechanics, most recent video game designs are so iterative, are so copy on a certain tier of production, are so similar to what's come before. I can't think of the last time I saw a new mechanic in something in a non-indie game, in a bigger game, where it would actually be able to be copied that much.
My answer is RT performance modes.
Oh, the hybrid of the two.
Being able to play it 60 frames a second is... It's there right now, but it needs to keep going, because Gotham Knights was a thing.
It was a thing. I think maybe Vampire Survivors. I don't think either of you played Vampire Survivors.
No. Oh,
is that iOS game where you...
Yeah, it's on Xbox, it's on...
Just a twin-stick shooter where you just aim...
Well, that's the thing, it does everything for you, and it's like, I like it fine, but like people absolutely effing love Vampire Survivors because everything is automated. All you're doing is moving your character and just hoovering everything up, loads of collectibles, loads of unlocks, and just taking on more enemies and whatever. I think that idea of like various parts of combat being more automated, someone will steer into that, because there's a weird like treadmill satisfaction thing of like, I'm getting all these gems, I'm getting all these unlocks, I'm getting all these, look how much damage I'm doing. Like, it just does it all.
Was that not Geometry Wars though?
Way more control than Geometry Wars, I guess. But it's honestly, Vampire Survivors, when I finally quote unquote play, because you barely play it. It's like when I finally played it, all I'm doing is just walking around quite slowly and just watching gems hoover up into my dude and then like power up and then he does cool stuff. Like, that's it. And then people are like, that's all you do. You just do that over and over again. Yeah. And it was just a weird thing. But I feel like because Vampire Survivors was such a huge deal across 2022, it was just in every single Game of the Year list and everything, that I feel like that'll be something, like just automation in combat.
Because
if you did it in some sort of like third-person shooter thing, maybe you have turrets that auto-target more enemies, and then you have a way of taking on even more enemies.
Like in Returnal 2.
Maybe.
Put it in that.
Who's playing that?
Well, you know, James Dowse and I will have to reconnect.
He'll not be here, so don't worry about it.
I'm leaving to work on
he'll
Returnal
be long
2.
He'll be long gone.
I would say, right?
Yes.
Like, Hideo Kojima got a lot of crap for saying that he was going to usher in like a strand genre. Obviously, that's not happened. But I genuinely think I love the idea in Death Stranding and the implementation of this idea in Death Stranding, where you have a world that only you occupy in that, you know, it's a single player game, but it's a space shared with other people in the kind of same way that Dark Souls is, where you can like, you know, you don't see other players, but you see the impact of other players. You see the messages they leave behind. And in Death Stranding's case, it's you see the structures that they leave behind. You see the way that they change the landscape, the way they change the open world by contributing to a bridge you might be making or building a part of that bridge while you were in bed.
That
and come
feeling
back.
Is incredible.
It is. As someone who doesn't like, you know, the forced four-player multiplayer era that we're in right now, that's my perfect kind of multiplayer where I don't actually physically directly interact with anyone, but we're all contributing to a goal. There is a sense of community there, even though I don't know who you are or what you've been doing directly or, you know, when you did this. Mm-hmm. I just know that I went to bed and I got up and we're all contributing to the same thing. And when you come back through some of those levels, man, and you have all of these structures made, it's a great feeling and a unique feeling. And I don't know if anyone could replicate it because Death Stranding as itself is a unique game, but I would love if they could and expand upon it.
Do you know what I played recently? I played Journey.
Oh,
and that's very much like that, isn't it?
Yeah. Journey's God. Journey.
Just there's just a random person with you the entire time.
And it's like at the very end, you get the reveal of who they were. Like you get their name, and then maybe you get in touch and whatever. But like that whole thing of sort of like helping someone that you're never going to meet. Like it's almost like leaving like a TripAdvisor review or something. I'm not sponsored by them, but something like that. And it's like I'm just helping someone I'm never going to meet, but I know they'll be better off with this information. That thing in Death Stranding where it's like I'm just going to spend half an hour getting all these resources and leaving them in places where other players can use them. And what the hell is that old phrase about like it's like humanity gets stronger by planting seeds for trees we know we'll not sit in or something like that,
right?
And it's just I love that whole thing of like just helping your next person but you have no idea specifically what they'll do. Things like that. I mean, the fact that Death Stranding 2 is happening and it's another major first party PlayStation game feels like it should have a bigger impact overall. So that might fold out into more stuff. Next question from Caleb J. Ross, who says, I'm currently weeks into a gaming slump. Every game I start, I stop just a few hours later. Josh, did you write this? I'm currently writing a book about what remains of Edith Finch, so I've been telling myself that I'm too mentally drained to play games, but I don't believe myself. Do you guys also hit gaming slumps? Any advice, please?
Well, like you said,
I feel like me and you both had this recently. Yeah.
This is my burner account. It is me. Yeah, I'm in this right now, and it's hard to get out of. For me, I would say, like, don't force yourself to play something just because you think that's what you do. That's what I like to do. It is, but it's better to like wait until something really grabs you because then you will enjoy it. And then you'll also avoid just being burnt out generally. I mean, how many times, Scott, me, you, and you probably yourself, Douse, have been playing something just because it was there and you're not really enjoying it. Then you get to the end of it and you kind of enjoyed it. It was okay, but you didn't have the burning desire for it. Mm. I mean,
you said you were going to trade in Final Fantasy Crisis Core. Yeah. You're like, there's no point me dragging my ass through this.
That's it. It's like I could, and I kind of want to stop that behavior. You know, I've had fun doing it before, but like, I just want to, 2023 is the year where you focus on the stuff you love.
It's the year of action.
Yeah, and you just go where your heart takes you. If you want to play an old game, play an old game. If you want to go back to Resident Evil 2 in the PlayStation 1, if you want to buy a CRT television to play that like I am, that's what you got to do. You got to go wherever the motivation is. And the motivation might not always be there, but it will return.
I always find that just doing something completely different helps. Like, I mean, I play like guitar quite a lot. I go for little walks around various lakes that I can find, do something completely different. And then for me, some part of my brain always serves up a memory of a gameplay mechanic or a thing I want to get back to or whatever I feel like I'm in the mood for. Maybe I'm watching a movie and it reminds me of something or whatever. And that nearly always brings me back to gaming. At least I actually want to take part in it, as opposed to what you said, Josh, where you're just sort of, it's like, oh, it's 5, 6, 7 p.m. at night. I'd probably game. That's what I do at this time of night. But sometimes you just need to do something else, as obvious as that is. So weirdly, ironically, the way to quote-unquote cure a gaming slump is to get away from gaming altogether and let your brain serve up the thing you want to do, which it will do if you care about the medium overall.
That's it, because you can get into a mood. I love being in a mood that kind of like crosses different mediums, and I have like a month where I just really want to play survival horror games, and I'm watching horror movies, you know, I'm watching the kind of similar things, playing the kind of similar things, and that's just what I'm indulging in for that month, and then it might change. But I love the idea of, you know, you might listen to an album, or you might watch a telly show that, like you said, Scott, like in like makes something click in your brain where you think, oh, that reminds me of this game that I've always wanted to play, and now I'm in the mood for it, and I'll go back to it. I think that's always helped me as well.
Yeah, I think knowing that you have years, decades, archives of content available to you. Like, there's so many old games on services like Game Pass or PlayStation Plus or the Nintendo Switch Online service, past classics that you've maybe missed out on that are worth going back to. Some of the seeds of the mechanics that we have now had, like, blown out into all these repeat mechanics, some of the original versions of them are pure and were influential for a reason. And diving back into something like Ocarina of Time or Link to the Past or Mario 64 or whatever, they're obviously an old Nintendo ones, but things that have that really like ambitious for their time quality, where it's like, and you can kind of transport yourself back a little bit, or I do this, where I'm just like, man, this was incredible for 1996. Like, look at this, and go from there. James Dawes, thoughts on the old gaming slump?
I agree with him. I'm currently in one, as I said, that Tearaway unfolded. I got half an hour in, then turned it off. Like Majora's Mask, I did recently. I got an hour into that, turned it off. My attention span is just not there at the minute with in terms of gaming. So I am in this slump, and I really want to get out of it.
I think a lot of people are actually in that right now. Like, yeah. Anyone who's listening to this, like, I think we all three of us have felt that way. I've definitely seen a lot of people tweeting about that and talk to people in real life about it. There is something about coming out of 2022 and the start of a year, and the start of a year that isn't the pandemic year, quote unquote, where it's like, we're supposed to be getting on with everything. And it's just like, but we're not yet. And like, we're doing, you just do what you can. And yeah. It's just like, don't feel the need to get into stuff. Like, oh my God, isn't this the new normal? Why don't I feel normal about it? It's like, just give it time.
But the thing that sucks is like, the game that I've played recently was Last of Us Part 1. Mm. But it's a remake of a game I've already played because I know it's safe and I've already played it.
Right.
So I'm not risking learning new things again. Mm. And then I'll play Fortnite or whatever, or Warzone and things like that. And it's just like, I am in this slump that I want to get out of. Mm-hmm. So
I think some of the comparison points as well, it's like, I love when all of us, quote unquote, are going through something. Like, we're all playing Elden Ring. Like, the conversations that came out of that are brilliant. And we're all going through God of War. It's like, when you see someone, they ask you immediately, like Last of Us, like, obviously it's a TV show, but at the start of every day, it's like, what do you think of that? And it's like, everyone's there. Like, I like that whole shared experience thing. I think that can be quite propulsive in itself. But those games or those pieces of media that bind everyone together are quite few and far between. Mm-hmm. At least they are right now. I feel like there's a bit of a burgeoning thing around Dead Space. And people might check in with that. But sometimes that helps, if I just kind of waiting until there's something that actually needs to be played.
And I think Zelda will fix that for me.
Totally, yeah.
You both had some really great points there. And I would just throw in one more. Like, we know we talked about television, movies, or whatever, to find something that you're interested in. What actually spurs me on a lot is watching like video essays on video games on YouTube.
Yeah, totally.
Like watching like a really great video essay about a series or a game or whatever always makes me want to play through that series. Like, I've watched a bunch of Jacob Geller video essays, or Noah Caldwell-Gervais, who goes through entire franchise retrospectives, and you watch it. And when someone's passionate about games, I think, and they're talking about it, and they're, you know, making you maybe even think about a game in a way that you haven't before, I do think it sparks the just for me, it sparks the desire to go and appreciate something myself in the same way that they have been inspired to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I would totally back that.
Yeah.
Learning the histories of stuff as well. Like, shout out to Matt McMuscles, who used to be part of the Two Best Friends Play channel, and then they do McMuscles does a whole series called What Happened about various sort of iconically disastrous games like Dead Space 3 or Dino Crisis 3 or Sonic 06 or whatever, and talks to the devs and gets in touch and does really great research finding out what happened with those games, which for me always makes me go like, I'm going to see what it's like, or I'm going to check out something, maybe the installment that came after that revived the thing, or go back to that weird one-off game where they lost their minds for a bit and see what it's actually like in 2023, like Dead Space 3. But yeah, sometimes the actual craft of gaming, where it's just like, it is kind of crazy that these things exist at all, like the trajectory across the decades and everything.
Well, going to what you said there about video essays, I found a YouTuber recently called Axe Mania, and, he goes through all of the old Tomb Raider games, like the original trilogy of them. Turns out there was way more than a trilogy. There was like six of the original ones. I didn't ever realize. But he just ranks them all at like every level, and I watched a video the other day for 3 hours. And I just thought, this is entertainment.
Oh, I'll tell you what, I'll massive shout out to Kidicarus as well. They their breakdown of every single Spyro game is brilliant.
Yeah, I've
seen that. Yeah, all their stuff where they go, I'm going to go through every single Crash game, every single Spyro game. That Kidicarus is an absolute workhorse.
I love that stuff, man. Like, I've talked about this before, but my favorite way to kind of like consume games or any media is to binge a certain thing. Bubble it, man. Like, I love playing entire franchises, the good and the bad, and seeing it for myself. And one day I'll find a way to make content on that isn't just shouting at you, Scott Tilford, in podcasts for the rest of my life.
I think you just batten down the hatches and put one little light above your head and just stream the whole thing for as long as it takes. One man streams everything.
But it's funny when you get like one of those video essays that you're just really into, and it could be like, you know, 6 hours long. I'm literally, for my birthday tonight, going to go home and watch a 6 hour long Tim Rogers video on a PlayStation 1 Japanese game that didn't get an English translation.
Yes.
And I know I'm going
to
love it.
Oh my God, shout out to Tim Rogers. Yeah. Tim Rogers, his Final Fantasy VII video comparing the original script in Japanese with the English script, all the different changes, with beautifully spoken Japanese as well, like completely fluent in that language. If you like Final Fantasy VII and just kind of, and like the idea of translations and language in general and how things change based on different translations, I think that thing is a work of art. Like, it's brilliant. And the way that it ends is great. The overall message is great. Next question from superfan number 3, Jules, aka Egg Daddy, who says, if we were all going to release a fragrance line, what would it be called and what would it smell like?
Oh.
I'm going to go with...
It's a very Jules, aka Egg Daddy question, isn't
it? I would call mine Hot Take. And it would smell like justice. It would smell like Vindication.
It would smell like...
Smell like I'm right.
The stench of someone who despises The Last of Us TV show.
Only the first episode, my friend. I'm back on the horse.
Yeah, go on, James.
I would call mine A Taste of Scunthorpe.
What would it smell of?
I think you know exactly what it'll smell like, Scott. It'll smell like I smell right now. It will smell delightful. Like an old hometown, but you know that it's a bit... run down and
best
it's
kind.
Oh, but sometimes that's beautiful.
But that's
though.
What I mean. Yeah, it's home. Yeah, yeah. It's home. That's
you get a little whiff of the pub around the corner. The whiff, Sunday dinner.
Yeah, the steelworks, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, whoa, get people, that people have lived there, man. Yeah. Oh, I love that.
I love that.
Sack up all the seas, man. You don't even need them.
That's what a winner. That's what I mean. Yeah. This is why he's gone on to bigger and better things, isn't it? These ideas, these multi-million-dollar ideas.
I'm making all you need. Taste of Scunthorpe.
Josh Brown, your fragrance of choice.
Well, for me, inspired by the drink that I'm drinking right now,
yes,
because it is also a pun on my last name, I'd call it the brown stuff.
Very good.
It would have my face on it, and it would taste of Newcastle brown ale.
Very good.
And also the River Tyne, and it would be the most repulsive smell in the entire world, but it would also smell like pubs, which can be an old man pub specifically, which I have a lot of nostalgia for, so there we go.
One
top one. The old smoking pubs, or is it? Post-smoking in pubs,
I would, well, the smoking pubs, but not smelling of smoke.
Okay.
Smelling
it used
just,
to be used for that. Yeah,
yeah just smelling of stale beer. Right, you know, I love walking past a pub that I would never go into, and it has that very specific stale beer smell.
Uh-huh.
Like, actually, get the brown stuff out of the way. Just get me the stale beer smell and let me spray that on myself. Remind me of my childhood.
An entire wing of untapped fragrances from old English pubs.
Yeah.
Next question from your done messed up Aaron, who says, the Royal Rumble's on Saturday. What's your favorite wrestling game / era? And I can't say Def Jam. So I'm going to say the SmackDown games. I will say that leap between SmackDown 2 and Just Bring It. That leap onto the PlayStation 2. Even though Just Bring It wasn't that good of a wrestling game, which obviously Here Comes the Pain, that's what everyone always points to. But yeah, favorite era was just when we didn't know what the cap was, the glass ceiling, when it was like you were actively waiting for new mechanics, you were testing the table physics. Oh my God, they still break into a V, it still looks bad. But you were testing to see how the commentators' tables would break. That whole run across the 2000s was magic.
I have no idea what you're on about. The only WWE game I used to play was the ones where, I think it was like 2K6? 2006, was it? It wasn't 2K then, was it?
No. Back then it would have been 2006, SmackDown versus Raw.
Sure.
Yeah?
Why not? It would have been an Xbox 360 one. It's probably about 7 or 8.
Interesting.
When you can make the characters like green. that was.
You did quite a few of them, but you make a very nice looking green person.
Yeah, that was the highlight of those games.
Yeah.
Really.
Who was your favorite wrestler, James? Dash?
Sure.
Mr. Sure. He does
I don't know.
Big Muscleman.
I don't know. Who's not cancelled?
Who can you name?
They're all cancelled, aren't they?
Probably. Almost like
The Rock. Sure.
Very good. Yeah, The Rock. Yeah.
Very good. Very safe. James.
James Brown. I want to say Here Comes the Pain, but now you've just established that.
That is the GOAT, to be fair.
That certainly is. You know, Here Comes the Pain. I've very rarely in my life been more excited to play something than when my cousin came home with Here Comes the Pain on PlayStation 2.
Yes.
Love that. But honestly, if I'm being truthful, whilst if we were talking about Tony Hawk's, I would want to say Tony Hawk's Pro Skater something is my favorite, but really Tony Hawk's Underground is my OG.
Oh, that's a madness pick.
In the wrestling terms, I want to say Here Comes the Pain, and I was very excited for it, but the one I remember... SmackDown versus Raw, the first one. That was, I loved it, man. There was something about that convergence, the amount of options that you had in terms of the create a character, create an introduction.
The campaign thing was great.
Campaign was
but
great.
They put all the grapples on the stick. They make it so you had to grapple with the right stick.
I like that. I liked it at the time. I really did. No. I thought it was good.
I don't like it at all.
Well,
what are you going to do?
What are we going to do?
Josh Brown, favorite wrestler?
Favorite wrestler?
Yep.
Can I go through the years? Because I don't have a favorite wrestler now, but okay. I used to love...
No, well, I mean, just whatever, when I ask you that question, it's from now, it's from past. What's your gut tell you?
It goes Hardy Boys, man.
That's a beautiful pick.
Yeah, I used to love the Hardy Boys. I used to watch the VHS of the Tables, Ladders, and Chairs from the WWF era. And then a bit later, loved Eddie Guerrero, loved Rey Mysterio. And now, like, I like keeping up with it through osmosis, like I've explained before. I don't watch it, but I listen to the people in the office and I look at the trends on Twitter. I like the look of that CM Punk guy. He seemed all right.
He's doing really well.
And you know what?
Active.
I wasn't even watching it, right? So I have no leg to stand on. But when everyone hated Roman Reigns as an outsider, I always thought, he looked all right. I mean, I had no context.
I have no frame of reference for this. Well, I only know AEW from the last year.
Scott, I don't. No, I'm talking about it. I just knew what he looked like and I liked his name and I thought, he looks sound.
two men who don't watch WWE talking about Roman Reigns and CM Punk. It's going very well.
Here's a little tidbit. Yes. For you. One of my, not first videos, but one of my later videos within my first year was me reacting to wrestling moments.
Oh, yeah. Non-wrestling fans react to wrestling moments.
And it was me, I think, I don't know who I was, but Ewan, I think, or Ash. And
Ash
me
did
and
one
Ewan,
of
you and Josh, and Ash.
I think it's you and Rich.
Yeah, I think it was me and Rich. You and Ash. I think it is, yeah.
Was it?
I think so.
Either way, that video got taken down for copyright.
Did it? That was really good.
One of the best things we ever did.
Yeah. But yeah, so I remember watching that, and there was one clip that I saw where it was a wrestler getting married and a snake came out.
Yes.
And that's my only frame of reference for wrestling. I don't know anything else other than that. And then that man jumped from the top, and was it on the cage, the Undertaker on the cage?
Yes, the little Mankind thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the one with the boogeyman and all the, he's all the worms.
Yes,
I saw that one. That's a very memorable bit.
And there's one as well where where you hypnotize, and he hypnotizes this man, and then his arm turns into a snake.
I don't know. And I remember that
It sounds
one.
Like Jake the Snake Roberts, but I think that's way too far back.
Yeah.
I don't know. Someone out there will know exactly what we're talking about.
I think there were some old ones in there, though. Right. Doing the video, yeah.
It sounds like that. Final two questions. One from Pinko, who says, I want to take the opportunity to wish Josh a very happy birthday. And also, which PSVR games do you think are an absolute must-have for the PSVR 2? For them, it would have to be Super Hard, Vader Immortal, and Star Wars Squadrons. And all 15-year-old them ever wanted was to fly an X-Wing in VR.
First off, thank you for the happy birthday. I really do appreciate it. Second off, thank you for the gift on my birthday. That is this question, because I always want to talk about PSVR all the time. Those are great shouts, by the way. Mm-hmm. I particularly want Star Wars Squadrons myself, because I didn't play that when it came out on the VR or even in the normal version.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would love that to come out day one. Mm-hmm. Super Hot would be great as well. Mm-hmm. I think all of those shouts are awesome. It was
that kayak one. Just in a kayak and you look at the water and there's a dolphin and
that's on the launch lineup.
I know.
You can get in there.
I know.
They've just announced today that Walking Dead Saints and Sinners 1 will be backwards compatible on launch, so that's going to be really exciting. Right. For me, it's one they have announced, and it's Pistol Whip. I've heard that's incredible. Yes. Again, watched a Jacob Geller video on it, because of course I did, and Jacob Geller really sold me on the idea. Just looks like it's really just incredible, right? Really tight, really cool idea of mixing the music with the actions in a similar way to Beat Saber, but you've got guns this time. That's the one that I'm going to buy day one, and I can't wait for that.
That's curious. Right now, I can't cough up the money for the PSVR 2. I'm going to see how it reviews, I'm going to see what experiences are on there.
Scott?
Go on.
Neither can I.
I want to see what stuff is fundamentally only doable on PSVR 2. If it feels like, oh my God, I need to try. If it's Spider-Man, I'm there. But
Did you ever play the Astro's Mission, Rescue Mission?
I didn't. I always wish I did, though.
I thought I'd enjoy that. So if that comes out for the PSVR 2.
Mm. They may do another one. I guess that was the original that sold the PSVR back in the day.
It's kind of annoying. Sorry to keep this question, but they've got Moss 1 and Moss 2 on it, which were similar platformers.
They've got Moss Death, though, have they?
What? Hey? I don't even know what that means. I don't even know what it means.
Sort of usage of the word Moss is all I was going for there. Yeah. I'm not even drinking. Carry on.
But they don't have the Astro Bot, and I would like the Astro Bot or Boy. I can't remember which. I always forget which one it is, but I like the
Astro Bot. Astro Bot's an anime, isn't it?
Is it?
Yes, with the long legs.
Sure.
He's got the knee bits.
I think so.
Bits. He's got long sort of shin pads.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he flies around a bit.
Shin pads.
He's been around for a while. Anyway, final question from Honest NPC, who says, hello, gents. Was the Xbox 360 / PlayStation 3 era the most significant generation? It introduced us to standard wireless controllers, internal storage, robust online play, digital storefronts, and DLC, etc. And every gen since has just been a slight iteration. What do you guys think? Keep up the amazing podcast. Well, thank you very much.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, we stuck in one big 360 bubble.
Like, when you lay out all the innovations like that, it feels like a big
leap. What major iteration have we got from after 2013?
That silence speaks, doesn't it? Yeah. It really
microtransaction.
Does. Microtransactions.
They predate it anyway. They were in 2009's UEFA Cup.
Considering both consoles were neck and neck in that generation, and then the generation after that, Xbox massively tanked themselves. Maybe that was more of a defining generation, because Xbox screwed themselves over that
much. Well, they tried to make the next big thing DRM, and the idea of you own everything regardless of where you're logging in, and that's what they've kind of done now. And that idea, I do like that idea, I just barely ever use it. Like, I can start Arkham Knight on my phone and then pick it up when I get home on the console, but like, that's such an edge case.
That's it, man. I feel like all of the stuff that has been introduced since then, and I don't mean to completely write them off by saying this, but has been a half-assed. Like, who uses the activity cards on the PlayStation? Who uses the share play on the PlayStation? They are welcome additions, 100%. I like that they're there, but they don't feel as instrumental as the first wireless controller or Xbox Live or anything like that. I think the closest we've got was the introduction of being able to capture your own gameplay footage or take screenshots. That was a next-level addition that I think, for me at the time, justified the purchase of a PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. But that's the only one where I've felt that's got staying power, that's changed the way I think about games in the same way that those previous innovations did.
What was that thing that they canned on PlayStation as well, where it was like your multiplayer performance would give you like badges? It was called PlayStation Badges or something. And you could barely see them, but if you hit the home button on the PS5 and went along to your profile, on your profile it would tell you if you were like friendly or competitive or whatever based on multiplayer performance. But no one knew how to give each other badges, and then none of that worked, and then they just canned the whole thing. Uh-huh. And it's like, that's just this weird, like another like derelict feature that they sort of half rolled out. Same with the ongoing PlayStation, like the cancelled NFT program that just resulted in giving you random Ape Escape bits of artwork and stuff. It's just like, I occasionally get the messages, I get the pop-ups on my phone saying, hey, you've just unlocked this. And I'm like, it means nothing. Mm. I don't do anything with it.
Do you know what I enjoyed? I enjoyed Snap. Xbox Snap.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Double tap to snap.
We
could have like a TV show on the edge of your screen whilst playing a game.
Oi, man, since I've gotten into podcasts and stuff, I was thinking about them getting rid of that and like, why? Yeah. I love that right now.
I think it's just the way to, because I do that on PlayStation quite a bit, where you can pin, well, not I say quite a bit, I've done it a couple of times, where you can pin one of the built-in tutorial videos on how to get a certain trophy. Mm-hmm. You can pin that and then play it alongside. Like, I've done that when I've been trying to get a platinum.
Man, I was just thinking when the World Cup was on, and it was the World Cup era, and I was watching games on the laptop whilst I was, you know, playing a video game on the actual screen. I was thinking, how good would it be if I could just literally put this in the corner of the television whilst I was playing, you know?
The thing is, though, like for me, picture-in-picture stuff, it's always going to, it's either going to be overlaid so it cuts off part of the frame, or if it shrinks the screen like what the PlayStation 5 does, it's just lots of like dead like space on either side. So they've not really found a good way to do that yet.
Which killed split screen for me, by the way. Once we got to the era where you didn't have the full screen while you were playing co-op split screen, like full, it just made it too small for my eyes for whatever reason. Right. I just felt like it wasn't appealing to play visually. I always wondered whether that was like intentional for people to try and see you away from the split screen by making it as you know, disgusting to look at as possible, or whether it was a real creative issue. I don't know.
I think it was completely sideswiped by all the online stuff, and then like all the weird little homebrew methods of attaching cardboard and like sort of you look that way and I'll look this way and try and make it fair. It was just completely wiped away by that. With that question, we come to the end of James Dowse's last day at whatculturegaming.com. A massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions and talking points and everything else, and a massive thank you to James Dowse himself.
Big bless.
James Dowse, big bless.
It's been a pleasureful 4 years working with you. And give me one final bottle clink before we go.
Clink, clink.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful time.
For you, Scott.
I'll fist bump your bottle.
Yes. And, I love you very much.
And that one on the table as well. And I think that, going forward, we'll obviously keep in touch. And a massive thank you once again to everybody. And again to James Dowse. We'll catch you all next week with a surprise third slot that I've not filled yet. We'll figure that out.
It'll be me with a mustache.
Some twiddling some glasses. But yes, for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by the last time by James Dowse.
Bye.
And Josh Brown.
Forever a pleasure, James Dowse. Oh,
shit. One more clink. Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.